Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, this is Scott Burks. Coming at you with the Clown Hour. I'm your host, Scott Burks, as I said earlier. But at any rate, I write a sports blog called The Clown Times. It's Clown spelled with a K. You can find us on the web at www.theclowntimes.net. And you can find us on Facebook, the glorious Facebook fan page. You just do a search for The Clown Times. Again, it's Clown spelled with a K. You'll find me there as well. To be entertained and informed equals infotainment. At any rate, I know it's the end of football season with Super Bowl 48 ending, mercifully so for the Denver Broncos. And even though I try not to look forward to 6 months of misery that is without any football, pro or college for that matter, we're going to just discuss Super Bowl 48 and give our reactions and everything. My man Dwayne Nash on the line. And let's get this party started. Dwayne, what's up, brother?
Scott, what's going on?
You tell me, man. You tell me. But, yeah, I was going to say, I think Jeremy might join us later, but he's a daddy just like both of us are. So we'll find out if he's able to join or not. But
that's fine.
How could I – ever be so wrong, dude? How could I ever be so wrong? Last week, man. We both said that the Broncos were going to win. You thought it was going to be a little bit double digits. I thought it was going to be like 8 points. And then the kickoff happened. Then Epstein around the world sailing over Peyton Manning's face into the end zone for safety. And the ass whipping, well, hell, it wasn't just an ass whipping, it was the curb stomp began. So, dude, before I go into my little soliloquy of why I messed up my pick, what the hell happened in your eyes? Was it the safety at the beginning of the game? Was it, what the hell happened in your eyes, dude?
Well, the one thing, in my opinion, that happened, that I kind of saw happening but expected the Denver Broncos O-line to actually step up a little bit better, you know, just watching tape, was that pressure that the Seahawks D-line put on Denver during that game. One of the games that I kind of backtracked to during the season where I saw something extremely similar happening was their game against the Indianapolis Colts, where Robert Mathis and that Indianapolis D-line was able to put so much pressure on Peyton Manning that he was able to hurry up a lot of his passes. But you never saw that for the rest of the season. So my impression was that, you know, Denver was able to handle pressure like that and would potentially be able to handle Seattle's front four. But, I was wrong. And also, I wasn't expecting them to kick an onside kick when you're down 89 points in the beginning of the second half. I mean, at this point in time, you're already down as many as they were. I can't even remember. What was it, like 25, 30? Whatever it was. It was something ridiculous.
It was 30.
And they decided to kick an onside kick. Why?
Yeah.
And then of all people to kick it to, they kick it to Percy Harvin. Why?
Yeah.
So there was a lot of things during that game. Well, not a lot, but just the main things were, of course, that front four put a lot of pressure on Peyton Manning, making him make decisions he didn't want to make. The back four not only put pressure on the receivers, but whenever the receivers caught the ball, they punched them dead in their face. And so a lot of times, not only were the receivers taken out of the game just by the play of the DBs, but it seemed like mentally they didn't want to be there because they were so physically outmatched. So, I mean, those are the main two things. And then Percy Harvin, a guy who that I didn't expect to play the entire game and actually didn't.
I didn't either.
Even those few plays he did play, he was phenomenal. I mean, that huge play that he had, that the run play, and then, of course, the onside kick return for a touchdown.
Hmm. You know what, man? You mentioned Percy Harvin's name. I thought that he should have got – I thought that he was going to get the MVP because every time Brother Man touched the ball, something good happened. I mean, the first handoff, the end-around handoff that he had, right, that he took from Russell Wilson, he went down the field. If he kept this behind the balance, it would score the touchdown, first of all.
Yeah.
That was strike one. That was blow number one. Blow number two was when Seattle got the ball back again. They did another in the round, and it's not as if they actually tricked Denver. They were like, "Well, you didn't stop him last time. We're going to try that shit again." And guess what? He gained another 10 plus yards and another first down. He caught a screen, a wide receiver screen later in the game. Well, late in the first half, I should say, and got a first down. And then the coup de grace, that pooch kick, that sorry excuse of pooch kick, at least kick it out now. At least get penalized, get it to the 4-yard line. At least it wouldn't be a score return for a touchdown. The pooch kick that to Percy Harvin. First of all, I'll tell you what, at the Super Bowl party where I was at, as soon as Percy Harvin's behind was back there, I'm like, oh, shoot. We're like looking around, like, uh-oh. So the sun's about to go down. They pushed it, right, and they bounced.
Yeah.
He caught it off the bounce. Okay, number one, he caught it off the bounce, eluded one cat to the middle, put a move on a couple of other cats and made them fall into each other, and took it back to the took it to the house. That's why I was like, man. All you could do is just laugh because I've never seen a curb stomping in Super Bowl like that since the late 80s. Remember when San Fran beat down Denver like they stole something, 55-10 in New Orleans with Joe Montana? Jerry Rice went up to score on those cats?
Yeah.
I mean, it was. I can't, man. But let's go to the stats right quick. Well, first of all, if you look at the stats, if someone did not, from like another planet were to come to Earth right now and look at the stats of the Super Bowl and do not see the final score, right?
Mm-hmm.
The stats doesn't look overly staggering. I mean, the Seahawks and the Broncos both gained over 300 yards of total yards of offense, with maybe 35 yards of each other. They both passed for in the 200s. Peyton Manning got sacked once. I mean, hell, if any statistical advantage that Denver had over Seattle was in penalties, if that means anything, Seattle was penalized 10 times. And we actually said during the game that the only thing stopped the Seahawks were the ones in stripes, so the dudes wearing the striped uniforms, not the orange uniform. And, I mean, the biggest difference, obviously, Denver took over the ball 4 times. But.
Exactly.
I mean. Yeah, and plus, you know, if you look at Peyton Manning's stat line, it's 34-49 for 280 yards, a touchdown, 2 picks. That doesn't tell the whole story, though. They got punked. I'm going to come out and say it. They got punked. The receivers got punked. Peyton Manning got shook from the pressure. Seattle hardly blitzed. They hardly blitzed, and they still managed to make Peyton Manning very uncomfortable. Extremely uncomfortable. I mean, he had happy feet. He was getting flustered. I mean, he was trying to pump up his offensive mates on the sidelines. The defense started playing Matador tackling like late in the first half or early second half when they knew it was over. They even put up an effort. But one thing that, I mean, it's easy enough to go off on the players, right? The coaching was totally horrendous. John Fox couldn't even coach a worse Super Bowl. He coached, you know, and I was thinking that he coached a bad Super Bowl when the Panthers played the Patriots, like, what was it, 8 years ago? Maybe more than that.
Well, the Panthers Patriots was about 10 years ago, yeah.
Yeah, about 10 years ago, right. Damn, that's a long time ago. But at any rate,
yeah.
I mean, the thing is that remember, like, early, like, what was it, late in the first half, they were down, I want to say, 22 to nothing, and it was right before halftime, and it was like, there was like fourth and whatever the hell it was, but they were within field goal range. At that
they
point,
they decided not to kick the field goal. But you know what? They're down 22 nothing.
Okay.
The three is just that. It's 3 points. And
right.
You're down 19 going into the second half. But
you
it, kick, it just looked
the
like
ball
they
to
just
Seattle,
could
yeah.
not move the ball. It almost was like, you know, we need to get points. And we need to get points, big points now. So instead of just going ahead and settling for three, let's see if we can go ahead and continue to move. Because they were moving the ball relatively, I'm not going to say effortlessly, but they were
right.
having a rather productive drive until that the last couple of plays there toward the end of that series where they got held, especially on that fourth down. But,
right.
you know, at that point in time, when you're down as big as you are, you might as well go ahead and go for broke. And that's exactly what they did. And that fourth down play, instead of kicking the field goal and that onside kick, were just two examples of them doing just that, going for broke and coming up snake eyes in both instances.
Yeah, I think when the second half began, well, I'll go back to that non-field goal try that, you know, they went for, like when they went for in the first half, like in a bit, but you touched on the kickoff in the second half, I guess. I mean, to your point, they did pooch it, right? They did try to catch Seattle off guard just a little bit to the point where, like I said, Percy Oliver had to catch it off the hop. And there were dudes around him, right?
Yeah.
I was thinking that he was going to get a little smothered, you know, just a little smothered. But the thing is I don't know if Denver gave up. I don't know if the special teams gave up on the play because, I mean, you don't make professional – I mean, I know Percy Harvin's nice. I know he got CS skills. I know he's crazy quick with bad speed. But they're professional ball players out there, man. You're not supposed to get shut like that.
yeah. But you know what? My thought on that whole play was still, don't kick it to Percy's side. If anybody don't kick it to Percy, please. Don't even kick it to his side. But you keep it. He caught it off. I really don't have anything other than, I mean, the best adjective I can use to describe that was disastrous, because that was just that. I mean, you don't kick it to Percy. He's the best guy on the field. It's ridiculous. Why even do that?
No. It's like giving the ball to Usain Bolt. You know, if you want to kick it out of his hand, don't give him the damn ball. Just kick it out of bounds. Do something, shit. Don't get the ball to him. Oh, Lord, dude. Like I said before, I can't. But let's just go back to that damn, you know, play that we were talking about, like near the end of the first half when they passed the field goal attempt. I see what you're saying. I'm not disputing what you're saying. I'm just, like, taking the temperature, as I'm sure that you did as well while you're watching the game. But Denver was getting punked. I mean, they had a good drive going. They had a great drive going. They moved the ball well. And they were then, like, I mean, they were right outside the red zone, if I recall correctly. And I'm like, okay. I mean, because it's one thing to get just 3 points, and you know, we probably should have went for seven because I went for book because we're getting ass kicked anyway. But it's another thing to go in the locker room after a successful drive that yielded 0 points while you're getting your ass kicked in the Super Bowl heading into halftime. I mean, to me, I know it would have been just 3 points, but that's like, it's better than, I guess, what I'm trying to say, in my opinion, it's better to have a small victory to give you some type of psychological hope Even if it's not but so much hope, then you just go, oh, shit, we came with 0 points. Seattle's getting high. We're down 20 to the net. We're going to have to give them the ball because they deferred. And, you know, obviously that's way before Percy Harvin just went Percy Harvin on those catch. But, I mean, to me it would have been a psychological lift if they would have just taken the points. And, you know, I'm not saying that Denver would have made some historic comeback. Hell, I don't know. I don't think it would have happened because of the way Seattle was playing. But, you know, I thought that it would have given them some type of little psychological hope. I mean, maybe I'm playing out the field. I don't know, but...
And you know what, I do see that point, and I completely agree. And I'm actually looking at some information right now where, they were actually just inside of the red zone. So, yeah, they were at the 19-yard line. It was a situation where it was fourth and two, and they were at the 19. Yeah, they could have kicked that three. It could have been, 22-3 at that point where they would have been down 19 going into the second half. And then the onside kick would have made a little bit more sense. But when you're down 22-0 and you kick that onside kick, it just didn't register with me that they do that. And then, of course, they do it to who they did it to. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it was the worst pooch kick I've ever seen in my life. I mean, I'm just going to go out and say it. And, you know, if that wasn't bad enough, you remember when Denver got the ball back after that disastrous special teams play? And when they drove, I guess they were like on the 30, hell, I think it was the 37 or 38-yard line.
Uh-huh.
And when John Fox elected the punt, you're down 29-0. You're on their side of the field on the 38-yard line. It was fourth and manageable. It was less than 10 yards to go. I do remember that. And he elected the punt.
Mm.
The look on Peyton Manning's face, it's like, he was like thinking, God damn it. that look on his face like, are you serious? That's when I tweeted out, John Fox just raised a white flag. I said, no,
yes, he did. He really
he waved, took the,
I mean,
he waved the white flag.
Exactly, because you're absolutely correct. It was a situation where it was actually 4th and 11, and they were on Seattle's
39.
Okay, my bad. Yeah, that's
okay.
All right. But you know, it's just the way that they looked the entire game. But you're absolutely correct. That is a situation right there where it seems as though you're in their territory. Nothing's been working all day, and you're getting closer, and you don't try.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can completely understand, especially the competitor that Peyton Manning is, why he would be upset in that particular situation. Why not at least try instead of just – I mean, you're going to give them all back anyway. The way that the playing in terms of offensively, you know, I wasn't I didn't expect them to drive down the field and score a touchdown on them, but at least make an attempt, you know, on the end zone, or at least the first down to see if you can get some points on the board, but that entire game could be considered to be a debacle, and that the final score was just proof of it.
It's just unbelievable. I mean, when he sent out that playing unit, we were like, "Oh, it's over." He just gave up. Well, I would say this. Speaking of Peyton Manning, Richard Sherman and company, you know I love some shit talkers, especially when they back it up, right? But they were talking after the game, he and Cam Chancellor and those boys in the second, they were talking after the game, mainly Sherman and Chancellor. They both said to a man that the Broncos were predictable offensively in terms of the route running. Because you notice
that,
did you hear that
Sherman and the defense was able to recognize hand signals from Peyton Manning by the first half?
Yeah. That was wild stuff, wasn't it?
Yeah.
They knew it was coming. They just like, okay. The moral of the story is the defenders get paid too, right? They do their film study. They read the down and distance. They know the situation that the situation that, you know, the office is in. and they can they can figure stuff out from a net film study. But one thing, I mean, Cam Chancellor was a bit more dismissive than Richard Sherman was, but I'd say I'd give Richard Sherman this. He did say that, I mean, since Broncos are running crossing routes and, like, wide receiver screens most of the evening, right? He said that since they were playing man on the outside, zone underneath, and they only had one safety, one deep safety most of the game except for maybe one or two plays. If Manning had those receivers do double moves, they'd be in the field, so been exposed because it was playing so aggressive on those receivers. They just didn't fear them going long. So which begs the question, Peyton Manning does not have the most stellar playoff record. I mean, could it be because he, not necessarily the pressure gets to him, I don't necessarily think that's the case anymore, but rather his failure to make adjustments to what the defense is doing and counteracting that instead of just sticking with his guns and being perhaps a bit more than stubborn about that.
That could be a huge hand in that. But, I mean, of course, there's several other factors in several other games that we could always point to, of course, with the infamous Baltimore-Denver game last year where if that safety does his job and be a safety in that particular situation and doesn't get beat, then, of course, Denver comes away winning that game. And then, of course, there's probably some other games as well. But you could be completely correct in terms of their failure to make adjustments, or maybe, and let's be real here, Peyton Manning's arrogance and potentially lack thereof in terms of, well, not lack thereof, lack of arrogance, but lack of wanting to make adjustments in the second half, which I kind of don't want to believe because, I mean, he is so good, but at the same time, he may be so good to believe his own hype in terms of, just I'm going to do what I want to do, you know, scripted or not, and I'm just going to go ahead and do it, and we're going to beat this team. And that could be a situation that could have happened where he just didn't make or chose not to make any adjustments, and we saw what happened with that.
Now, was it okay, I'm going to stay on Peyton Manning for a minute because what you said spurred another question in me, another thought I should say too. Given that this is Peyton Manning's second Super Bowl they lost, this is his third Super Bowl he played in, he beat the Bears, which I thought was an inferior opponent in that Super Bowl, even though they did get there. But they lost to the Saints where he got outsmarted by that young brother who jumped that route and took that pick six back for a touchdown, for a pick six. And now this Super Bowl, where his team just got curb stomped, punked on the way to that curb stomping. He's 1-2 in Super Bowls. His brother is 2-0 in Super Bowls, Eli. So here's where things may be a bit diametrically opposed. You have in Peyton Manning perhaps the greatest regular season quarterback of all time, right? But nevertheless, he has a sub-500 record in the postseason, including two Super Bowl losses. Now, what does that make for his legacy? He's like he's pretty much one Super Bowl win away from being for Dan Marino. So what should his legacy be? A guy who the greatest regular season quarterback ever, or the fact that he just could not win the big one, win when it counts?
You know what? He, in my opinion, is still one of the greatest QBs of all time.
I agree.
Regardless of what happened in the Super Bowl, because it is a team effort when it comes to the Super Bowl. So you really can't take away what he has done. When it comes to his entire career. Plus, he still has another year or two to go, but we shouldn't really have to hang Super Bowl wins on a guy to prove his greatness.
Yeah.
We still consider him you know, Dan Marino as one of the best QBs of all time. No Super Bowl rings.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, Elway was in that class as well, even before he won his two. So, you know, to that in there in terms of, you know, he his legacy was on the line. He's considered less of a QB because he's lost two Super Bowls, especially with the fact that, you know, Eli won two. You give Peyton Manning those Giants defenses, I guarantee you Peyton comes out with two Super Bowl rings as well. So you shouldn't hang what this dude has done in his entire career. It's not like that 55-touchdown year was just an anomaly. This dude has had a great career. You can't go ahead with Warren Moon. He's another guy. No Super Bowl wins.
Yes.
Is he less of a great QB because he doesn't have any Super Bowl wins? I doubt it very seriously. So there are several QBs out there who are fantastic that have either lost in Super Bowls or have no rings whatsoever.
Dan Fouts is a good example, too. The Chargers quarterback way back in the day. You know, he had the unfortunate circumstance having the Raiders in the same division, you know, when the Raiders were in their heyday, too. You know, when they won a couple of Super Bowls and played in the AFC Championship games against the Steelers and others. You know, it was just unfortunate set of circumstances for Dan Fouts, and Kenny Stabler, I'm sure, reminds him of that every chance that he gets. I'm sure he does. I mean, and the list goes on. I mean, I think you mentioned, I don't know if you mentioned Jim Kelly and Buffalo. I mean, he took the Buffalo Bills to four straight Super Bowls. That's four straight Super Bowls.
Completely unheard of. That is phenomenal to do that. I mean, that was Tarkington that basically took those Vikings teams to the Super Bowls back in the 70s, right?
Yeah. Right,
four
right.
Super Bowls with him, not consecutive. Jim was able to do it consecutively. I can't think of any team, actually, there aren't any teams that have been that great that for that long in terms of making Super Bowl appearances. It's ridiculous, and we probably won't see it again ever in our, especially in our lifetime, if not ever again.
I mean, and you could thank the salary cap for that because that totally just
leveled the field.
You know, they killed dynasties. That's a dynasty killer. So that was before when Jim Kelly was doing this thing. That was well before the salary cap in the late 80s. Well, what a 90s, really.
Those were the early 90s.
Right, when they were doing this thing. So that's good. I mean, because keep in mind this, too. I mean, no, I like Trent Dilfer as an analyst. He's very bright. But Trent Dilfer won a Super Bowl. I mean, you're going to put Trent Dilfer ahead of Dan Fouts and Dan Marino. And Brad Johnson won a Super Bowl, too, now. You're going to put Brad Johnson up there with those boys? Okay, I mean, because it's so subjective how people judge quarterbacks. You know, it's so subjective.
And you know what? It is changed throughout the years because it used to be a time where, you know, okay, is your quarterback good enough to win a Super Bowl? Then you start seeing certain types of QBs or certain types of teams winning Super Bowls, and then you're like, you know what, is your quarterback good enough to win multiple Super Bowls? And then if he's not good enough to win multiple Super Bowls, then he's not considered to be elite. So the definition of – and then all of a sudden that's the other thing too. That's been the catchphrase over the past couple of years – is whether or not a QB is elite or not. And unfortunately, it takes, in a lot of people's mindset, a Super Bowl win or two in order for a QB to be considered elite. And it may not be because of his play completely. It could be because of the play of the entire team.
Right. And that's the thing, too. I mean, like I said, it wasn't just Peyton Manning. It wasn't Peyton Manning was not a sole fault. I just want to make that clear to everyone out there. It's not. I didn't think it was solely on Peyton Manning. I think he's going to get, you know, as most all quarterbacks do, going to get the lion's share to blame for the loss or overpraise for the win. Like, you know, I'm happy for Russell Wilson, but let's face it, people are loving a lot of Russell Wilson now, even though, to me, it was like Percy Harvin, the defense, that won that game for Seattle.
And that's exactly who won the game for him.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, but Russell was getting all love, which I'm at him, but he's getting a lot of love. So let's see. So now, last question here. As we christen the 2013 NFL season, tears and sobs and sadness. Seattle's young. Seattle's young. They still, I don't think they have any big free agents right now.
Not at all.
But I don't think they do. I don't think they have anybody who's about to hit free agency, either restricted or unrestricted. So I actually wrote on my blog that I think it's going to be a start. Sorry, cat be damned. The start of a potential dynasty, because I look at who's in the NFC right now who could challenge them. Other than San Fran, or which I think is Steelers Ravens all over again, by the way, an improved Panthers team, an improved Saints squad, or maybe the dark horse, the Cardinals, can throw a monkey wrench in it. Remember, they won 10 games. Didn't get in the playoffs, but they won 10 games last year. And squishes, perhaps, I think the NFC West is by far and away the toughest division in football. Even if you count the improving Rams. You look over the AFC, it's pretty much Denver and whoever, right? It's almost like the 80s again, where you have a strong NFC and a weak AFC. But my point is this. I think that the Panthers, while they're going to improve, and they'll probably improve more next year, I just think that Seattle still could take them out. Even with the Saints improving, I think Seattle could still take the Saints out. The only team that could stand in their way are the 49ers. And I think that they may have the 49ers numbered. So I'm thinking this may be a little bit of the dynasty we might see on the horizon. Mind you, because the only thing that could, other than the 49ers, that could take them out is overconfidence.
True. Well, that in history, but that's a whole other conversation.
Yeah, that's true. Damn, Sally Cap.
Well, not this year, of course, coming up, but. Another thing that would be in Seattle's favor, of course, would be their scheduling for this upcoming season. If I remember correctly, they have the AFC West coming up this year, and it's kind of favorable for them because they have Denver at home, and chances are that'll be the first game of the year.
Yeah, so, I was about to say NBC better make that happen.
Oh, of course. Mm-hmm. So with them having Denver at home. They have the Chiefs on the road. We'll see how that happens. San Diego, they'll have them on the road. And then they have a bunch of other tough teams at home this upcoming season. So their schedule will be in their favor. It's just whether or not, number one, of course, if they can stay healthy.
Right.
Number two, if they can stay par with the rest of the conference in terms of getting better or staying better, because, of course, Atlanta gets healthy again.
That's true. I'm not going to count Atlanta out 2 years in a row.
You can't. You really can't. I mean, even with them losing Tony Gonzalez, that's what they call him, Antonio Gonzalez, with them losing Tony Gonzalez, they still have that potent offense with Roddy White and with Julio Jones.
Julio Jones.
And that monsters run game. I don't know. Is Steven Jackson still on the contract?
I think he is. I think he is. I think they signed him for 2 years last year. So he'll be back. And they got that kid, Jack Quiz. Did they still have that Jack Quiz? I think last year was Green. Has that scat back?
Rogers. Jack Quiz Rogers. Yeah. With him coming back as well. I mean, even though Tony Gonzalez doesn't think that Matt Ryan is elite, I still believe that team is still rather good, and they did beat knockout Seattle in the playoffs last year. So, yeah, looking at Seattle's schedule next year, they have, of course, their division. They also have Dallas at home, the Giants at home, Denver at home, and Green Bay at home. Mm. But they do go on the road to play Carolina, the Skins, the Eagles, the Chiefs, and the Chargers. And one, two, three, four of those teams are playoff teams outside of their division. So it may be a little bit rougher on the road for them. So I just want to see how they are able to face those teams, because that's where they seemed to struggle last year. I mean, they went 13-3 last year, right? Or was it 12-4?
Right.
No, they went 13-3. And two of those three losses were on the road. And I just want to see if they'll be able – they won't have as soft a schedule as they had this past season. But they do play, you know, Denver and Green Bay. Green Bay being another team who I would watch out for in the NFC because of their history. But one thing that has hurt them in recent years, of course, has been their health. With Clay Matthews being out, with who was the receiver they lost during the year as well? They lost two of their receivers, didn't they?
Yeah. One in particular, it's on the tip of my tongue. He's a damn good player. He was one of the speedsters, actually, special teams guys.
Cobb. Yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, it won't be a cakewalk, but I'm still thinking that they are the team to beat, in my opinion, in the NFC. But as history has shown us, no one repeats as the conference champion the following year. It's been some time since that's happened. And expecting it to happen, matter of fact, it hasn't happened since 2003-2004 with the Patriots. So
that's right.
I'm not saying that it won't happen, but I'm not expecting it to happen. So we'll see. But yeah, they are extremely dangerous.
Yes, they are. I was going to say, how weird is it for Seattle as an interconference schedule to play the AFC West? How weird is it to see Seattle going to Arrowhead to play the Chiefs, going to Qualcomm Stadium to play the Chargers as not an AFC West opponent? How weird is that? How weird is it to watch them play Denver in the Super Bowl? They used to be fierce divisional rivals.
Yeah.
Separate conferences now. Golly.
It's going to be weird. I mean, it's happened before, but it's going to be weird because I think now we're paying attention to it now. And that's what they're going to talk about all season long, is the fact that they are playing the AFC West again. And of course, it'll come up. And you're absolutely correct. If NBC does not or if the league does not set up that first game of the year as Denver-Seattle, I would be completely shocked.
I'll be pissed. I'll be pissed and disappointed because that would be a Raiders bonanza. I mean, can you imagine the storylines? It's like Broncos Seahawks 2. Would it be another curb stomping? Would it be? See how Denver comes out. You know they're gonna be pissed and embarrassed and want to close that.
Oh, you know.
I mean, it's just natural. So it would just be bananas. Just be freaking bananas if they were to hook that puppy up. I have no idea Denver's gonna be playing the schedule to play. And Quest Field next year. That's freaking awesome. That's awesome.
That's great. Well, anyway, man, hey, thanks a lot for doing this on short notice, my brother.
A
pleasure. All right, my brother, I'll talk to you later about the draft, man. Since the draft's coming up and one Johnny Manziel and others buzzing around ESPN, you know that's a hot topic. So we need to set something up for that, my man.
Most definitely.
All right. Take care, my brother.
All right. You do the same. I'll speak to you later.
All right. Peace out. That's my man, Dwayne Nash, breaking it down the Super Bowl. That was just crazy. That was I've never seen a curb stomping that bad since the late since the 80s, since the mid to late 80s. I mean, it was just, it's just incredible how bad things were, just things went for Denver that game. I mean, I just didn't see it coming. But anyway, like I was alluded to earlier, we're going to talk about the draft next time. Well, at least the next few podcasts until something, the spirit moves me to talk about something else. But David Stearns, retirement, and whoever the Knicks decide to do, my Knicks decide to do with Carmelo Anthony or whatever. But at any rate, the next time, Scott First, it's a fine hour. Thanks for listening. Ooh, I'm out.